Reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras. Chapter 4, verse 58. Anyasmat solabhyam daktau. Success is easier to attain by devotional service than by any other process. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnanan Jana Shalakaya Daksuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaye Vicha Atidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Greetings from Kentucky. I'm visiting the Bhagavad Commune with Vrindavani, Charachandra, Rajaraja, and Kirti, and they're inaugurating their project on Memorial Day weekend. So I came here to encourage them. To develop a lifestyle that supports spiritual life as Prabhupada has taught and spoken about. So, especially in the world today, where the standard of living is going down, it's nice to get wealth that's not dependent on the present economic system, which means land. So they have 180 acres. And they're beginning their life and project here. So it's really nice. I'm happy to be here. And I know the Sadowskis will come and Kula Pradeep and Mira and John Luvan and a few other people will come. And I've come to get out of the city to chant Hare Krishna, a peaceful place here for a little while. In contrast to that, because I've traveled today, so it's hard to get too shastric after. I realized something too in devotional service. You know, people don't practice because of a lack of time. People don't practice because of a lack of taste. And a lot of times our taste has to do with the mode we're in. That's one of the ideas of trying to solve the economic problems in another way than the modern system, is to try to solve the economic problems in a way that you cultivate a proper mode. I can see that with me, too, because I was just upstate, you know, waking up and chanting, and you know, it's such a difference once you travel, the mode of passion, parking the car in New York. Whenever I park the car in New York, I think of the Woody Allen nightmare. Woody Allen nightmare, it's like it's midnight in New York, and he's being carried in a coffin, four pallbearers, down a desolate street in Manhattan, and they're walking in order. And then he sees a parking space. And then he parallel parks with the coffin. And then another coffin comes in and steals the space. So I'm just seeing the mode. You know, I'm going to New York to preach, finding a parking space. I like getting out of the parking space, because I like the mood of compassion for someone else who's looking for one. And you know me, when I'm in the wrong mode, it becomes a comedy routine rather than a philosophical class. So I was in New York on Tuesday night, and it was wonderful. I gave the class at the Bhakti Center. And so nice, Padarajni Cook. I did kirtan in the class, and it was just a wonderful, intimate atmosphere. And I'm connected with that since the very beginning, when most of my lady disciples had what's called the Temple Without Walls. There's Panchakishori and Gopriya Mangalartik, living outside, working outside, coming home from work, cooking, taking the... Now to see that they have such a nice spot there, so clean and nice people there. So I gave class on Anjalila. So I'm giving a little bit of a background before I get into this section of the Narada Bhakti Sutras. Just because it's easy for me to speak about that, because I didn't get back to New Jersey until 11:30 at night. And then after getting back to New Jersey at 11:30 at night, and getting up early, getting on the plane, and getting into Lexington, driving here, devouring the best pizza in the world cooked by Raja. Very digestible. So right now, settling down. But I gave, Anjalila, I'm doing that on Sunday, and it's just like the idea of Anjalila, the end. Lord Chaitanya's Anjalila is when he's 30 years old. And that's actually the idea of the Bhagavatam. The one who's spiritually conscious, you have to be cognizant that life is temporary and you got to get serious. Of course, at different stages of your life, to get serious, you have to fulfill certain desires that when you get older, you may not have to spend time with if you do it properly. But the objective, right, the whole basis of the Bhagavatam was the question of what is the duty of a man who's about to die and what should he not do? And when Sukadeva Goswami heard that question, he said, Vrian Asha Te Prasha, it's the best question. It's the prime subject matter. Because that is every man. And I was thinking myself, everyone says, I had somebody say, you're already 40s. Well, 40s is the new 30s. Ladies used to get married at 20. Now they're married to 35, 40. It's like everything's put back. So I was thinking maybe sannyas is like that. 60. It's the new 50s. But I think I got to get serious, the Anjalila. And what is serious? I have to realize my relationship with Krishna. And it's not an intellectual thing. It's a feeling in the heart of love in a particular way. And that's what Lord Chaitanya was seeking. Because God was seeking to have that feeling. God was seeking to become a devotee. So the Anjalila shows how you do it. You chant Hare Krishna and you develop a relationship with the holy name by nurturing it with the appropriate songs and stories that express those feelings. And you worship a deity that embodies the form of the relationship, the object of the relationship you're aspiring for. Lord Chaitanya worshipped Jagannath because he wanted the highest feelings of love in the mood of separation. And Jagannath is a deity in separation from Srimati Radharani. Jagannath is a deity in relationship to Radharani, in relationship to those sentiments that she had of the highest feelings. Because it's the deity of Krishna Kurukshetra that's going back to satisfy Radharani's sentiments. Of wanting her lover, it only manifests in Vrindavan. So nice speaking about the Anjalila, And it was nice, too, for me. I'm expressing this personally because when I'm in America, due to my, what am I preaching, my circumstances, when I'm in America, I'm preaching mostly, except for my sanghas, I'm preaching to outside people. So I'm not talking rasa. I'm not talking love. Bhagavatam is love. It's love for God. Bhagavatam means what? It's a description of the ultimate reality. What's the ultimate reality? The ultimate reality is an overwhelming aesthetic experience of bhakti and devotion. And when you read these stories and read these pastimes, that's conveyed to you, and that's what bhakti is. It's getting the ultimate reality by stories about the ultimate reality, which invoke that sentiment in your heart directly, and that's what poetry and drama does. So I generally don't do that. I do that in Vrindavan. I do that in India. I sit every day at 4:30. And I had a realization yesterday, too, because, you know, therefore I was able, you know, it's easy. You know, you got a congregation that's already there with devotees, nice people, and you know, quality people sitting there. You know, very nice quality, and including, you know, Lakshmi Sringa, Kastub and Gita Priya, Lakshmi Sringa and Pataraji. You know, there's quality people that are listening to the class, plus they're brahmacharis who are very, you know, and, you know, be able to speak. And I saw how much appreciation there was, because generally we're so much in the preaching mood, you know, we're so much in the preaching mood that our frame of reference, again, it just somehow, I like the concept of Hari Katha. You know, Hari Katha, speaking about Krishna directly. And, you know, you need the right audience. Otherwise, they don't have the frame of reference. So to have the audience that's interested in Hari Katha. You know, Gail was there also. I was so surprised. Hari Katha, speaking about Hari Katha. You speak about Lord Chaitanya, you're speaking about Krishna. Because when you speak about an exalted person, you're trying to enter into their heart. And the heart of Lord Chaitanya is the mood of Radharani. So what better way to enter into the pastimes of Vrindavan than through Gaur Lila? So reading that Chaitanya Charitamrita and be able to read it with the devotees, I was fired up. I was fired up. It's very enthusiastic to do that. And the response, you know, you see that people want to hear these things, you know. And then I felt, yes, this is what my life is. I'm doing the Shastra, you know. I it may not be a lot of people in Vrindavan. It may be 5, it may be 10, it may be 15. They do it every day. Sangha is Wednesday. Every day you go through the Shastra, you go, then you realize you do this, you actually have a frame of reference. Because you go through a lot. You believe, you just, you know, these classes, I've given almost 600 classes now on these sanghas. It's an hour, it's 600 hours. You go through a lot, even if you go through 1 or 2 verses a day. You know, if you go through 1 or 3, you go through a lot of verses. And then, but you do. I do it every day in Vrindavan. So relishable. And now, on my Wednesday class, it's more, you know, I do the Yoga Sutras. I'm doing the Narada Bhakti Sutras. The philosophical basis. So, we had here talking about the topmost bhakti that's so rare and transcendental, and which is hard to describe unless you have the experience of it. It's like there's certain things children don't have an experience of, so how do you explain it to them? They're not of that age where they have those feelings. So, you know, bhakti, the real bhakti, it's you have to give people a frame of reference. but it was described, and it's the goal. That divine love is the goal. Doesn't it make so much sense? Our philosophy, right? Just like I was at, because I'm having an audience here, so I'm also going to talk to them. I was in Rutgers. Professor Brian asked me to give his classes. It's always amazing the subjects I get. And he's doing the. The subjects that I get with him. This time he's just teaching the Bhagavatam using Prabhupada's verses. I had 40 students. So he said, well, Chase, he's on the eighth canto. He said, shoot, I did a katha of Gajendra Moksha. And then in his Hindu philosophy class, he was on Ramanuja. So he gave me the text. It was Vaikuntha. Explain to students like Kunta. What I did is I asked them that meditate on a perfect world. I said, how many of you have come up with an amorphous mass? Isn't a world of love and beauty more reasonable as the ultimate reality? So, prema, divine love, is being described, and it's described that there's also, it's not always pure. It's mixed with motives according to our modes. And if it's in ignorance, it sometimes can even be mixed with sectarianism and hate. And if it's passion, it can be mixed with personal ambition, building big temples. You can build big temples, and Prabhupada build big temples, but you can also build it as a representation of your own ego. You can see it can be mixed. And then it can be mixed with goodness, where you do it for your own liberation. And then there's pure bhakti, where you do it for Krishna. So you have to be able to distinguish. I'm a devotee is not enough. You have to know, you know, what your motive is in it. Right? So important to hear. Otherwise, we never have the proper frame of reference. Anyway, I'm enjoying the place here. It's an incredible view outside my window. I'm a nice little house overlooking a ridge, and so many acres you can't even see it. And there's another godbrother who's 30 miles away that has cows. And you've got gallons and gallons of organic milk, like huge pots. And, it's... The more we can, and if it's our karma, and if it's our desire and it's our karma, the more we can create an environment that's conducive to the proper mode, then the easier it is for our Krishna consciousness. And that's the goal. The problem is we don't have faith. And what faith means, I love it. I love Prabhupada's definition of faith. To trust in something sublime. So your faith is where you trust is sublimity. If you trust it is serving Krishna, which means you have an experience of it, then your life goes in one way. And if you have faith in other things, it goes in another way. You know, faith to trust in something sublime. And you have to have the right conception of sublimity. You have to have the right object that actually does give you sublimity. And according to theistic philosophy and Krishna consciousness, it's devotion. Devotion will give you sublimity. So what is the life we have to lead that will give us the best chance to put devotion in our heart? And then there's an ideal, and then there's where we're at, and then there's our karma. But our karma is what? Our karma is our destiny. And what causes our destiny? Our decisions. So what our future is will be based upon our desires now. So anyway, it can be mixed and due to material qualities, due to material consciousness, how much you're still centered, how much your faith is still that sublimity is an enjoyment that requires control, and how much your faith is its service that's dependent on surrender. The more people mature, the more they base their happiness on changing the mind rather than changing their world according to their desires. And when people mature, then that's what their focus is. Doesn't mean you don't try to create a supportive environment. For spiritual life, not just, so it's really based on your faith. Now, regardless what one's objective is, devotion is very, very special. Very, very special. And that's the verses we're going to discuss today. I just want to go through those verses. So the first thing it says in devotion, success comes, that's the verse today, is easier to attain by devotional service than by any other process. And this is a core quality of bhakti as a means, an abhideya, that it's not a material qualification. It's a qualification of heart. I've discussed this before. I'm not going to go over it too much. It's a qualification of heart. Now, that may be hard, but it's not a material qualification. It's like a mother to serve the child. She has to have love. She doesn't have to be educated. Mothers have to be beautiful. And be wealthy. And be, you know, she just has to have love. Love may be hard, but it's not a material qualification. It's a qualification of heart. So, it's easier. Because qualification of heart is available to anyone, and material qualification is restricted by your karma. Spiritual qualification is not restricted by your karma. You just have to surrender wherever you are. I was meditating on that myself. This is my meditation for the week. I'm 60 years old. Surrender. Surrender. How much longer do you have to live? When are you going to do it? And what surrender doesn't mean, it doesn't mean become renounced in that sense. It doesn't mean giving up things. It means dedicating things. And it means giving up those things that can't be dedicated. It doesn't even mean that you can't fulfill your desires. Because part of devotional service is, part of our philosophy of Krishna consciousness is that you have to enjoy to live. Something. Keep the body and soul, it's not that. but it's what you do more than to live. And it's not only the things that you do, it's the things that you consciously do. You know, because someone can be very surrendered and just have struggle with the senses. We see that. You know what I'm saying? But they're really surrendered. And Krishna sees that, but they struggle with the senses. But it's when Krishna gives you the facility and you don't take it. And you have to reflect on your life. What are you taking deliberately beyond your need? Give it up. How much are you surfing the web? Give it up. Beyond. Give it up. Surrender. That's the entrance to bhakti. That's the door to bhakti, is surrender. I'm talking, I am preaching to myself. Surrender. It's so blissful to surrender. To do what Krishna wants you to do, which may include the satisfaction of some of your needs and your desires. It's a very, very practical... I thought I had some... wrote something here. I'll be okay. What? Peppermint. What? Peppermint. You have a peppermint candy?
Yeah.
Okay, get me a peppermint candy. Even if it doesn't cure my throat, I get a peppermint candy. No, I'm okay. I'll wait for her to come. Oh, I'm not. Surrender. When you surrender, life becomes easier. Because you become happy serving Krishna. When you do things against Dharma, it molds the mind to lower forms of perception and contentment. It's really beautiful to see a surrendered soul. Kirti da. Kirti. They went to the Festival of Inspiration and she was describing to me how humbling it was to meet some of my god sisters. Nadi Shakti and Vishaka. You know, people have surrendered. So that's easier than a material qualification like Jnana. Jnana and yoga, it's a material qualification. Controlling the mind entails a high level of renunciation. Now, bhakti also entails, but it's not the same. Because bhakti is dedication, so according to your level you give. We see surrendered devotees that are not yogis. But they are yogis, because they just do their service. And they give their heart, and they serve people. Or they take care of the cow, or they preach, or they work to the deep, or they take care of their family in Krishna consciousness. So process is simple. Success by devotion is easier. It's not easy, it is easier. Not easy. It is easier. Because the concept of no material qualification. Then the next verse, well, let me read a little bit of the purport here. Narada assures that everyone can speedily advance by practicing devotion, bhakti, because it's the easiest way. This is extremely important qualification, especially for us in the present age, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a very bad age for material qualifications. So in this age, if you're going to try to advance by a process that requires a high level of material qualification, sattva, renunciation, jnana, knowledge, etc., it's going to be real difficult for you. So, therefore, Jiva Goswami makes the most beautiful comment. Jiva Goswami says that kirtan, devotion in the form of kirtan, devotion in the form of kirtan, devotion in Kali Yuga, devotion in the form of kirtan, is easily performed for those who are free from false prestige or something. Devotion in the form of kirtan. Now, kirtan is a classic example. You may be in any material qualification, any mode, but you can participate in a 12-hour kirtan. Maybe a little struggle, it may be something, but you can do it. So he says, therefore, in Kali Yuga, it's very efficacious. No, devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those who are devoid of a sense of false prestige. Then he says, Kali Yuga is the best. Why? Because Kali Yuga really gives us the best opportunity to be humble. Because we don't really have qualities. And I sometimes think, it's a joke to me that people in ISKCON say, oh, Maharaj gives great classes, Maharaj is very learned, Maharaj is. Because I've been in India. I know what learned means. I know what learning karma means. I had one person who used to be a student of mine when he was 8 years old. He went on to become the top Bhagavatam scholar in Vrindavan, below 40. He got an award. If I ask him any verse, he will rattle off 5 or 6 commentaries and explain the verse in absolutely perfect conceptual and expressive ability. It's the karma people have. I know a friend, a Sanskrit scholar, about it. He said there are still people in South India who are Shrutidhar. What's your time? You're Shrutidhar. They can remember something by hearing it once. There are still people who are Shrutidhar. So, Kali Yuga has that opportunity, and know, in Satya Yuga, they didn't practice bhakti because they were so qualified. It just was too easy. So they didn't give it value. It's like, you know, someone who has like all kinds of athletic skill or something, and you know, it's challenging, and they can't accept it as very serious. Of course, you can say it is more difficult because it's a qualification of the heart, but understand the qualification of the heart is a different thing. The qualification of the heart is something that's available to anybody. And I've seen people who weren't, I saw people surrender who really didn't have other qualities. I remember there was one temple I'd visit where there was a godbrother who lived outside. They had severe mental problems. Severe. We'd come every day and clean the temple. Every day he would clean the temple. And he was humble. And whenever I come to the temple, he would bring me some juice. You know, that was his thing, you know. Some kind of, like, that we wouldn't normally get in those days, like a carrot orange or, you know, some kind of mix. But what does Krishna look at? He looks at a person's heart. That's the secret of chanting. The secret of chanting is that Krishna is listening to your chanting. And the whole key is that it shouldn't be done with offense, deliberate inattentiveness, and deliberate neglect. The whole story of Ajamil is because even when he named his son, his chanting was innocent, so Krishna was getting pleasure from it. I always think the danger of becoming a devotee. Because with innocence, you're chanting at Nambas. You become a devotee, you can chant with offense or purely. Because you have knowledge now. The innocent chanting, which is based on humility and dependence. And therefore you have a sense of urgency, you have a sense of need, a sense of taking shelter. That's why pride ruins devotional service, because you can't take shelter. You can't take shelter if you don't value the need of the shelter of Krishna, of the name. You won't be attentive to it. Is that the... There's a cardinal at the window. What? Oh, wow. He's trying to get in. It's just like at Shastri's house. There was a bird for years. I was banging against the window. It's a very nice house here. Nice wood floors. That's important, right? With the house, you know, you want it, not creaks and spaces between the floor. Somehow or other, I could see that too. I mean, I'm going to make another point too. This is just my practical realization. Devotion gives us the best chance, the spiritual consciousness, which is a change of heart. But we should not neglect working and developing things that could help us because we're not in a proper culture that they're automatically instilled. That's why one takes diksha. The holy name is sufficient. You don't need initiation. Nam is sufficient. But we have so many tendencies. We have so many tendencies, bad tendencies, that unless we regulate our life, we succumb to them. And that's why I generally recommend that you get diksha and you worship the deity. And what's the deity? Ritual. I talk a lot about this with Mahamuni because he comes to devotional service and then you kind of sometimes think, oh, ritual is not important. Now that he's studying Confucius, he knows how important ritual is. To conform your life to something greater than yourself. That's what the deity does. We don't do it seriously enough. You know, and you can see how Prabhupada instilled that. You know, the consciousness of the deity. And maybe here, we really have to have the consciousness that it's the deity's place. Really highlight the deity as the center. Maybe even have to take the deity around the property to see his land. Has he seen his land yet?
He will be this weekend.
It has to be based on the deity. If without the deity, it's hard to physically situate yourself out of the center. That's what the deity does. That's why ritual is important. Not blind ritual. So, I've seen in the yoga world, sometimes I go to the kirtans, and you know, I got to give the yogis credit. I sometimes see yogis that are sitting for the whole kirtan, sitting up straight with their eyes closed, focused. What the devotees should be doing. Who are sometimes so unhealthy and so sweeted out or whatever it is. When I first came to the movement, we ate so simply. Unfortunately, the temple I came to didn't have good prasadam at all. And after being, you know, growing up the way I grew up, where your mother wasn't a good mother unless she had a cookie box. This is the training. The mother wasn't a good mother unless we used to have a... She's looking and she's testing you now. The mother wasn't a good mother unless we had a drawer where all the cookies were and the cookies that we like. Chips Ahoy, Fig Newtons, Hostess Twinkies, you know? I love those Fig Newtons. Because nothing beats Reese's peanut butter cups. But you would go and stuff. I remember in evening, I would eat 10 times. You'd eat dinner, and then you just keep on opening the refrigerator and stuffing your face. That was our culture. And you come to the temple where it's eating at regular times, and there weren't, you know, all the. So they make up for that on Sunday with the cold sweet rice. You know, I mean, I'm lucky I'm alive now by modern medical science. You know, when you eat a huge thing of halva and then seven cups of sweet rice, what were we thinking? And cold sweet rice, what were we thinking? And I remember waking up the next morning, eyes crusted together from the dried mucus that is welling from my body from that overdose. So this is also an interesting topic. It's called moral theology. I wrote an article many years ago, does ISKCON have a moral theology? Because I had a friend who was a priest who read the Nectar of Devotion and sought me out. And he's very humble. He went to New Vrindavan. He's an old man. He used to carry Barsana Marja's books. He was a very nice person, Reverend Mogan. And he said, he wondered, does this guy have a moral theology? In other words, you concentrate so much on transcendence that you forget humanity. You don't cultivate it. It's not in your culture. So a lot of times a church, not just Christian church, but a religious body, will have a moral theology. How you cultivate ethical and moral behavior within your theology. Right? And that's why sometimes you see that happens, why devotees take shelter of some kind of psychology or something, because they're seeing that although technically speaking everything can come from devotion, because they lack the supports for that, they don't sufficiently practice devotion to be purified, but think because they're devotees, they don't have to cultivate other things. And then they don't develop the proper human relations, the proper social things, proper psychology. So it's a really interesting question, moral theology. Because we've seen it. Haven't we all seen it? Concentrate on transcendence. You can't transcend, you can't practice transcendence, you don't practice anything else. And then you lack the basic moral and ethical and social skills. But ultimately, the focus is to practice bhakti, because from that so much will come that you can't get in any other way. And therefore you have the phenomena in spiritual movements that you get the best and the worst. Because the people that really practice bhakti get an elevation of consciousness and a character that people can't cultivate independently to the same level. And then you get the people who can't practice because they don't have the basics, but neglect the other cultivation, thinking they already have it in the name of devotion. At any moment, whenever one decides to surrender, and wherever one gets the associate pure devotees, one can take the express elevator of bhakti yoga. The reason devotional service is the easiest of all spiritual processes, the next verse, is that it does not depend on any other authority for its validity, being itself the standard of authority. So basically, the nature of bhakti is the means and the end are the same. So you're getting affirmation right from the beginning. Where in the process of Gyan, the affirmation comes from the... Of course, you get some affirmation in the mode of goodness, but the goal is different than the practice. Okay, I'm going to stop here for today. I think that was pretty good considering last night was in New York till 11 o'clock. I was really happy to be able to preach in the Bhakti Center. Lakshmi Shriga invited me to speak. I'll be speaking there every month in the Bhakti Center. I'll be looking forward to it. Great setup, And qualified people listening to a lot of different types of people, but the brahmacharis, they were quite elevated souls, quite intellectual, brilliant people. A lot of them, they were listening, they really appreciated. I've been in India, studying these things, but people generally don't study. Waves of devotion, Rupa Goswami, those kind of sentiments, those kind of feelings. I was very, very fortunate to have served Sri Rupa Goswami by writing The Ways of Devotion to express his teachings. So that gave me a very nice relationship, because that's how relationship develops, through service. I was also describing the speciality of Rupa Goswami, that he understood Lord Chaitanya. When you understand someone, what does that mean? That they've given you their heart. Now, I'd explain, there's I mean, great benefit to giving one your heart, and there's a great risk. The benefit is, if you give someone your heart, then they can serve you better. The risk is they can exploit you more too. So therefore, who do you give your heart to? And what are the qualities in that person that inspire you to give their heart? It's a level of love that's expressed in service. Then you give your heart. Because the person wants to serve. So you let them know how to serve. Okay, are there any questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Gail, Hare Krishna.
That was the perfect segue into the question I was wanting to ask, but I was feeling reluctant because you didn't really talk about it. You know, it was like from last week, but now you just mentioned about this, you know, the heart thing. Anyway, the question I wanted to ask was, you know, when you have said in the past that we should try to see how we can get into the heart of an elevated soul, so that, you know, they can give us what they have. My instinctive reaction is that it has like a manipulative like ring to it, you know? And so I was wondering if you could address that.
She said in the past, I have an audience here, that I said we should get into someone's heart. Why should you get into someone's heart? What did you say? What did I say? Because?
Because when you are in the heart of an elevated person, they give you.
Because you're in the heart. The goal is to get into the heart of an elevated soul. Right? The heart is to get into, the goal is to get into the heart of an elevated soul. So, Gail said that's kind of, you know, rings of kind of manipulation. And this is a question that Gail's brought up from different angles many, many times.
Really?
And it's, yes, you have. And I'm going to explain you have, how you have. The way you brought up many, many times, it's the same question of love being a personal desire to be with someone. And how is that love? You know, there seems to be something within the category of love that you want to be loved by the other person. You want to be in the other person's heart. And that seems to be contradictory to love. And it seems to me, and this is a very subtle point, that, you know, when you love someone, primarily you want to serve them. Primarily you want to do what's good for them. You don't have a agenda of your own. But at the same time, it's natural to want to be with people that you love. But it doesn't compromise the fact that you want to serve them and you'll give your life to them. But there's obviously some attraction to that person. It's the same question of the heart, the soul. Anandamaya Abhyasat. It says the soul is pleasure-seeking. But there's a type of pleasure which is called love. There's a want that you have for love. There's a need that you have for love, to give yourself and to want to serve. And somehow or other, even though it is a desire of your own, it's a pure desire. It's desire. It's something you like. It's something you want. It's something that gives you pleasure. It's something that you're striving for. But it's the basis of it is dasya, to serve. So also wanting to be in the heart. What does it mean, wanting to be in the heart of someone? It basically means that you're in a loving relationship and that they love you. You love them, they love you. It's reciprocal. But ultimately, Ashlishiva, Padaratam, Panastumam, Madarshanam, Mamahatam, Karotava, you made me make me brokenhearted by your embrace, you know. By not being with me, you may crush me, but I'm still your Lord birth after birth. It's love. That's the ultimate thing. It's love. But that doesn't mean that it's not a natural part of love to want to be with the person. It's just not the primary thing. The primary thing is the person, their desires, and what they are. But there's certain other feelings. I want to be with the person because I love them. I'm attracted to them. Anything else?
From me?
From you?
Anyway, not from me, but it was really great to see you preaching yesterday, so animated.
That's right, the phone.
So much better than the phone.
Yeah, you usually just see me at the phone. You saw me with all my wailing arms and bug eyes and smiles and
boomerang eyebrows.
And what, boomerang eyebrows?
Yeah, your eyebrows always instinctively remind me of boomerangs. Because that's
they become like boomerangs. Like boomerang
eyebrows.
No,
but that's their natural shape. That's their natural shape. Boomerang.
Krishna has Simba lips. I have boomerang eyebrows. you're a poet, Gail. You're a poet. But actually, it's nice, because when I'm in Vrindavan, people see me every day. They sit every day. They come. There's certain people that come every day from whenever they're there, and they sit, and I give class every day. I see if there's one thing I've done right in my life, is I've always spoken Hari Katha. Charchand is there in Mayapur, right? We get 50 people, right? Such good students from the MIHE and the people that live there, quite elevated people, speaking Hari Katha every day. Okay, Gail, I'm going to set the next date pretty soon with Lakshmi Nisringa.
Yeah,
every
I'm excited, month. Excited. I'm so happy that you're doing that every month.
Okay. Word will get around. There'll be more people. True. Okay. And it's nice, Pata Rajni, you know, she's such a nice cook, you know. She's just tasteful and nice. And such a nice quality of people there, isn't it? You know, that are there too. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello to Kentucky?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Rajarade.
Rajarade, okay. I got your message. When I'm free, I'm going to try to come for prasad.
Thank you, Maharaj.
This is the Daniel Boone Forest. How high is that? Bunch of help for two, Mr. Okay, anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my Asambala business with all grace to Srila Prabhupada.
Nanda Dulal, I heard the festival inspiration was inspiring.
Yeah, really, really. No, that's why I couldn't attend your class.
Yeah. If it wasn't inspiring, it wouldn't be a festival of inspiration.
that's
nice, huh?
Yeah. Manu and Novi, they also went.
Who?
Manu
and Novi. Wow. Wonderful. Really, Prabhupada's mission. What's that?
Yes. Can you hear me, Maharaj?
I can hear you, yeah.
Oh, I wanted to hear you itinerary when you'll be able to come. If you can send me beforehand.
I will try.
Okay.
Haribo. Okay, Vanchakopa through Bishakapasindhu.